Greetings and welcome to another RVW Wealth Wisdom podcast. We have the great honor today of welcoming to our line of esteemed guests, David Soffer, who's a leading estate and tax and trusts attorney here in Los Angeles and someone whom we work very closely with. And it is our great pleasure to welcome you to our studio today, David.
Thank you for having us, Zoan and Jonathan.
Today, the topic is going to be an estate planning primer. Everything you need to know about estate planning in generic terms. Obviously, nothing here is deemed to be legal advice, should not be relied upon. And of course, you should always consult your own professional advisors. It is our pleasure to welcome David Soffer today to the studio.
Welcome, David.
David, it's great to have you with us. You're one of the smart, caring, and very, very creative estate planning attorneys we use. And we're delighted to present your thoughts, your wisdom, and your insights to our listeners today. Perhaps you can start off by telling us broadly what the context is, what the limits are, and who needs what kinds of trusts, et cetera. The helicopter view would be great.
Of course I can. And again, thank you for having me, and thank you for your kind words, Solomon and Jonathan. What I frequently tell my clients when we are starting the process is the number one goal we're trying to achieve is just documenting your wishes and putting what those choices are on paper. I know that sounds obvious, but that's what the crux of estate planning is. And so we set up a series of documents to answer some big picture items. Things like if you are incapacitated, who makes decisions for your healthcare? Who steps in to make decisions for your finances if you're unable? When you pass away, what happens to your assets? How do they go? To whom do they go? As well, if you have little kids, who's doing the day-to-day caretaking of these kids and how all of these things interplay? So it may be complex, it may be straightforward, but the very first thing we have to do is make sure that we have that plan, we put it on paper for everybody to understand and appreciate, and that way the families respect it, the law respects it, financial institutions respect it, and we have the formalities in place.
For the benefit of our listeners, explain what the difference between a comprehensive estate plan is and a will, because it sounds like you just described a will.
Of course, of course. So all of those questions have answers, and they arrive in different places in a comprehensive estate plan. So in California, for instance, we use living trusts or revocable trusts. Not true in every state, but in California, 99.9% of my clients it's appropriate for. We also do wills. We also do powers of attorney. We also do healthcare directives and a few other documents, which I'll explain in a bit. But all of them interrelate, and it is a way of not only answering what that person's wishes are, but also making it efficient and effective. So things like avoiding probate. And not everybody knows what probate is. It's a court process that if you haven't done this type of planning, kicks an estate when somebody's passed away into a series of going in front of a judge. There's legal fees, there's time, there's wasted effort that doesn't need to take place, and a living trust can answer that. Whereas a will does need to go through probate, so it can still answer the questions, but it's just not as efficient or effective here.
So probate has costs.
Yes.
It's public, and it's administratively challenging.
All true, and time-consuming and frustrating.
Right. Whereas if everything were titled appropriately in a living trust, you'd simply fax the document to the custodian of record, the bank, and the trustee can immediately act or take the role of the decedent or a person who's now incapacitated.
Absolutely correct.
We call it a loving trust rather than a living trust because it is an act of love for the people you leave behind so that a seamless transition takes place without any court procedures and without any publicity or costs. So we think that's excellent. I would just mention that a living trust that's created but not funded is absolutely worthless. And we've had clients where that's happened. So the living trust itself is not worth anything unless you stick into it the assets which you want to be subject to the seamless transfer. I wanted to just ask you another question on this.
Of course.
What are these other documents that you mentioned and how do they tie in to the overall estate plan? Can you give us an overview of what the documents are and what each role is?
I absolutely can. And in fact, to piggyback on your point, we want assets of somebody who has a living trust to name the trust as the owner of their assets. It's as simple as changing the title while somebody is alive on a deed when it comes to real estate, on an account title when it comes to bank or brokerage accounts, to list the living trust as the owner. And that shows the world that that asset is owned by the trust, follows the nice plan that is laid out in the trust, shows who the trustee is, who's empowered to act on behalf of that asset, avoids probate, does all the nice things that we want to do in an estate plan. If the asset is not titled in the name of the trust, it doesn't get any of those benefits. We still create wills, and the function of a will is twofold. Number one, if somebody hasn't titled their assets in the name of the trust, the will at least points to the trust and says, this asset is supposed to go in there when I die. So it's good enough to get it where it needs to go. It is not good enough to avoid probate. So this is why we still create wills as a backstop. And the other, as I alluded to earlier, is if we have minor children, this is where we nominate a potential guardian if the parents are not alive while the children are still minors. We create powers of attorney. For the same reason, this has to do with incapacity and who can step in to manage finances on an incapacitation. We want the assets owned by the trust, and we want those trustees, the people who are empowered to act on behalf of the trust, to be able to deal with that. But if there's something that is outside the trust or there is a non-trust financial issue, the power of attorney is kind of that backstop as well. We'll create a healthcare directive. A healthcare directive is really two things in one, utilized in California frequently to nominate somebody to make decisions for healthcare. And also some big ticket items for that person's healthcare, like pull the plug or don't pull the plug, donation of organs, things like that. So all of these are interrelated decisions that we want to make sure look to each other, these documents.
Thank you. I wanted to point out to our listeners that everyone listening actually has a will. The only question is, are you electing to make the will yourself, or you're simply adopting the standard uniform will which the state of California or the state that you live in imposes upon you? And we always remind our clients that they all have wills. It's just that some of them have abdicated their responsibility or failed to exercise the obligation they have to the people they leave behind them to actually tailor a custom will. And that is something worth pondering for those of you who are in doubt. Our word of encouragement to people who haven't yet gone ahead to make a will is that it is a living, breathing document. And our view is that anything you do will be better than nothing. So getting it close enough is good, and then you can change it. And whoever you use as your lawyer will be more than happy to make an amendment to your living trust as often as you like, or an amendment to any of the other documents as often as you like. So we always tell people, just get it done. Because don't let the perfect stand in the way of the acceptable. And then once you've got it done and it's done and it's on paper, the costs and the hassle of modifying are minimal, and you'll have a document that is at least reflective of more or less what you want, even if it's not ideal.
Well said.
There's one other asset that we've seen overlooked in the estate planning process, and that's retirement plans and life insurance policies, which, correct me if I'm wrong, David, but those are governed by the beneficiary designation on record rather than an estate planning document.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Those have some unique rules. And so retirement accounts first. The rules that govern retirement accounts state they cannot be transferred into a trust. In fact, they can't be transferred out of the individual's name at all during life. And so those go by beneficiary designation. The good news is that it avoids probate on its own based on that beneficiary designation. The bad news is it also avoids your documents unless you tell it to. So you might have created a nice estate plan, but if you don't point to that estate plan on your retirement account beneficiary designations, it will be ignored.
David, following on that, we've had clients come in here after divorces where they redid their estate plan, but nobody dealt with their retirement funds. And we found retirement funds going to former spouses. So taking a look at your retirement designations and life insurance designations is absolutely critical. And those, as we've all agreed, are not covered by your estate planning documents. David, can you just give us a sense of the impact of estate tax and when it becomes an issue for our clients?
Of course I can. There are a number of taxes in this country. We're all familiar with the income tax, but there's also sales tax, property tax. The one I think you're asking about is the estate tax. And essentially the way that one works is after you've paid all of your income tax, when you die, the government adds up the value of everything that you own. And if you are over a certain threshold, you'll pay an estate tax. That threshold historically was at a much lower rate, but it has increased significantly over the years to the point now where in 2018, it is approximately $11.2 million per person that can be given for free of estate tax. That number is subject to change, just like many other tax laws, in the year 2025, at which point it was, if Congress steps in and does nothing, it will go back down to approximately $5.5 million adjusted for inflation. So at 11.2, very few people are affected by this. What it's done has created the need potentially to go back and look at estate plans that were created or drafted prior to the tax law changes, because they may be reflective of earlier laws trying to do something that would avoid or minimize an estate tax that is no longer relevant.
But as recently as the early 2000s, the limit was as low as $1 million.
Correct.
So when we look at the 2022 horizon, we really all bets are off as to where this thing will go.
That's exactly right. I'm not in the business of predicting politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing to bear in mind is now there's a tension between two taxes, because on the one hand, we always strove to avoid estate tax. But the price you pay for that is you don't get the step up in basis at the time of death. So on the one hand, estate taxes could be avoided, but they're actually less expensive in many cases than the capital gains tax step up and the depreciation. Complex area of interplay between two taxes, and clearly the role for a creative and competent lawyer and accountant to work out the optimal situation. But people who did their estate planning a year or two ago ought to review it relative to this tension where they want to make sure they don't exclude too much from their estate and lose the opportunity for the step up in basis, because a step up in basis means that that's the equivalent of what you start depreciating from if it's real estate, or the cost that you deduct from the selling price when you sell something and determine the capital gain. Too complex for us to deal with in detail in this podcast.
Just give us an example. So you're saying you take an asset and you gift it to a trust to utilize the large exemption today, but then upon your death, you don't get the step up. That's what you're illustrating.
Correct. So getting rid of your assets is great, as you say, for avoiding estate tax, if you can get rid of it at an appropriately discounted rate and so on. But on the other hand, you don't get a step up in basis. Let's take a simple example. A building that is worth $1 million that costs you $100,000. When you die, if you own that building either directly or through an entity like an LLC, through a living trust, or even in your own name, at the time of death, your heirs will get a step up in basis. In other words, it will be almost as if they bought the building for the $1 million that was the market value at the date of your death. They could sell it the next day and pay no capital gains tax. However, the problem with that is that if it was a very significant asset and you decided to move it out before your death, then the $100,000 basis would stick. And if it was sold the day after your death but wasn't in your estate, there would be a capital gains tax on the full $900,000 difference between cost and market value. Grossly simplified, but hopefully illustrative.
Absolutely. And I think to your point, this is the benefit of having good advisors who can see that perhaps the tax law changes can work to the benefit of clients where it wasn't anticipated before. We can use these new laws to create a tax windfall or benefit where it might not have otherwise been.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
If I can just summarize briefly the points to take away, and we always promise our listeners at least one serious takeaway. The takeaway this time is, any estate plan is better than none. If you don't write your own will and do your own living trust, you will be given gratis the state estate tax plan that has been designed for you in the state capital. And that is an abdication of rights that you have, obligations that you have to the family and the ones you love. So that's why we call it a loving trust. And for those of you who haven't taken care of your estate plan, do so today.
This podcast is not intended to constitute investment, legal, or tax advice. The ideas and strategies expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those recommended or implemented by RBW Wealth. Please consult and rely exclusively on your professional advisors.